I wanted to speak this morning. I might go longer than 8:45, so totally get it if you need to leave then. So be well if you need to. And the talk I want to give is called What We Can Do. I suspect for most of us, if not all of us, here this morning, we have gone through a trial, like a body blow on Tuesday. If you're celebrating what happened on Tuesday, the Dharma is here for all beings. You are welcome here. My views are not, I'm not celebrating, I'm devastated. But whatever your views are, welcome. I want to talk about what we can do in response. How do we respond to, again, I suspect most of us are shattered, devastated, bewildered, grieving, sad, scared, angry. There's probably a big mix of things we're feeling. And so what do we do? What can we do? So I want to talk about what we can do for ourselves and then what we can do for our loved ones in our community and then what we can do for the world. The first thing in talking about ourselves is keep practicing. Our practice uncovers our bodhisattva heart, and the bodhisattva heart in its fullest expression is one of deep wisdom, unconditional love, and responsiveness to the pain of the world. And in one of the groups I lead, someone said, you know, with great like disappointment at the results on Tuesday, that, you know, as I mature, what I remember more and more is the world is not here to make me happy. That's my job. And, you know, this is really the essence of our practice. And more than ever now, we need the training of our practice, and our practice trains us in deep happiness. That's the point of our practice. And we access this happiness that's free of conditions, that's free of things going your way or going against your way. Where is that? We need that more than ever now. And so it's a training in letting go. What a relief, right? To realize that my thought world is not actually happening. Our thoughts in a very general way capture what's happening, but our experience is way too complicated and changing way too fast. And thinking mind cannot capture moment by moment what our experience is. So just remember that. And be willing to let go. We need to think, of course, and we need to let go of thinking. And when we do let go of thinking, actually, what's interesting is our thinking improves. We become more intelligent when we stop trying to be so intelligent, because the brain is able to go to new places when we let go of directing our thoughts, when our intention is to be with breath or body or sound, or metta, whatever your practice is. And we purify greed, aversion, and delusion in our thinking mind. We are at our greatest intelligence when we're not reactive. And these three root reactive states, greed, aversion, and delusion, really cloud our intelligence. So it's this ironic and beautiful process. The more we let go of thinking, the more intelligent our thoughts become. We see more clearly. So our practice trains us in letting go. It trains us in present moment awareness. And it trains us in unconditional love, in metta. And it's really a training in all the qualities you might think we've turned against in our society. It's our mindfulness practice is a training in non-harming and non-violence. We could say that the root of aggression, the outward root, can be injustice. The inward root of aggression is the inability to sit with our experience just as we are. So our practice is a training in all the qualities we feel the world needs right now. So in civility, in non-harming, in decency, in respect, in listening, in equanimity, a training in being bigger than our trouble, right? This, the move of our mindfulness and metta together is in the same move we get closer to our the trouble in our hearts as we get bigger than it at the same time. This is what mindfulness and metta do for us. We're willing to allow, you know, what's happening in our heart. And at the same time, the very act of paying attention to it and being kind to it means we're in wise relationship with it, and it means we're bigger than it. We need this now more than ever. So keep practicing. And when you're not practicing formally, may we all be taking our practice off the cushion, mindfulness and kindness, into our lives. And really stay connected to your body. Really notice your physical experience. You can bring your mindfulness practice into folding the laundry, seeing the soap bubbles as you wash their dishes, you know, contemplate the miracle of the universe supporting us through food and cooking, but dance, singing, music, art, exercise, and getting outdoors, all of this we need everything. We really need to up our game on what we love. And what we love, a lot of what we love, is physical, staying connected to our body and the earth. When we're connected to our body, we're grounded in the present moment. We're less caught by the stories of our mind. We know who we are more fully because our personality is tricky, but the body tells us how we're really doing, free of our personality. And our body allows us to be open-hearted while not being swept away, you know, with all the trouble we feel in our hearts. So if you can ground in your physical experience, when, you know, of any emotion you're feeling, you will be able to be more open, but less swept away. And so keep practicing, stay connected to your body, to the earth, get outdoors as much as you can. The trees are not caught up in all this trouble. So, you know, talk to the earth, ask the earth for help, ask the trees for help, really pray for help. We all need it. And so staying connected to our practice, to our body, to nature, and stay connected to your heart. Honor everything you're feeling. All of this is something we can do. Our practice is not passive. Our practice is a very active doing of focusing our mind. And when we focus our mind, we're happy, even if our experience is not pleasant. A focused mind, it's what our mind wants to do. And we can then bring this kindness and awareness and focus to our heart and feel everything. And many people are feeling grief. Honor it. Honor sadness. Honor bewilderment, confusion, anger, fear, all of it. This is our heart. This is coming from our care. And the first principle of grieving is allow everything you are feeling. And we do this in our practice, the way we stay open when there's anger or fear or grief, is we notice the physical experience. How does it feel in my body when I'm sad or when I'm scared? The more I can ground in sensation, the more in the present moment I am. So we acknowledge the story and then we stay in our body. And then what happens with our emotions? Our emotions are energy that will move if we don't keep feeding it. The more we open to it and the more direct we are and feel our emotions in our body, the more our emotions express their nature. And the word emotion is motion with an E in front of it, and the E stands for energy. An emotion is energy that wants to move if we let it. But we have to first, for it to move, we have to be with it. We have to allow it, honor it, and feel it. And this is how we find resiliency. We just see that our trouble is moving and we're bigger than it. So this is everything we can do inwardly. What can we do more outwardly? So in our immediate world, with our loved ones, with our coworkers, with our friends, with anyone we see in the grocery store, engage your strongest values. With everything that you think has gone wrong in this election, in this country, double down on the opposite. So maybe your thing is truthfulness. Start being more truthful with yourself and others. Maybe it's being respectful. Maybe it's listening. Maybe it's not causing harm and noticing the subtle ways we cause harm. So this is like a call for us to double down on what we value most. And you might just, if you're not familiar with the paramis, these are the kind of beautiful qualities of heart, of the Bodhisattva heart. You just look up parami online, and there's a list of 10 things that we could all start practicing more. Generosity, morality, renunciation, wisdom, effort, patience, truthfulness, resolve, kindness, equanimity. That's a big list of how you can, engage your deepest values in the world of relationships you're embedded in. Another thing we can do in our world of relationships is be an ally. Seek out those in your network who have less privilege than you and see how you can help. Maybe it's LGBTQIA plus folks. Maybe it's people of color. Maybe it's immigrants that you know. But, people who are going to be targeted, how can we help? And I, as a straight white male, carry so much privilege. So, a principle of being an ally is to use your privilege to help people who have less privilege. And it means standing up for people who are being targeted, even when we feel scared. It means being willing as we work, if we're a white person, with our BIPOC friends or being an ally to other BIPOC folks, we will make mistakes. There's just no way around it. And it hurts to make mistakes. It's so embarrassing. And yet, if we're not willing to make mistakes, then we just kind of fall back into our privilege. And that's part of our privilege, is that we don't have to feel uncomfortable due to our race or due to our gender orientation, or we can just kind of coast along in our little bubble. So this is something we can do. And a very important principle of being an ally is to understand that it is our job to educate ourselves. People of color get very sick of you, us asking them to educate us. We as whites, really need to take that on. So this is something we can do, be an ally. So finally, in the larger world, what can we do? That's where it's most difficult, right? These are immediate things we can do right here in ourselves and in our immediate world. The Bodhisattva orientation is love and wisdom. It's clear seeing and then responding, to the suffering that we see. And there's so many role models for Bodhisattva activity. I think it's very helpful to read about people, who've dealt with great struggle. You can read about Nelson Mandela and what the whole anti-apartheid movement went through in South Africa and succeeded. One very moving thing I heard about Nelson Mandela is that he was so upset when he was imprisoned, just for his views, and because he had no one to love. And then it dawned on him he could love the guards. Those were just human beings, even though they were the guards. So there's so many role models for Bodhisattva activity. I, in particular, am, I was, as a kid, we went to a lot of civil rights rallies. So I grew up in the 60s. And, my heroes are Martin Luther King, Coretta Scott King, John Lewis, Fannie Lou Hamer, people who just put their lives on the line to fight for what they believed to be just and true. Fannie Lou Hamer said, this civil rights movement was this marriage of direct action and nonviolence and love. And she said, I feel sorry for anybody that could let hate wrap them up. Ain't no such thing as I can hate anybody and hope to see God's face. So the Bodhisattva heart is motivated by love and compassion, and yet we might be fiercely needing to advocate for justice, and we don't need to oppose people. We oppose harm, harmful actions, harmful ideas, harmful speech, harmful actions of body. And we can do that without hate. We can do that as part of our spiritual path. We can be sending love to all beings. May every one of us be happy while we protest injustice. So we all can work for justice in our own way, and we're all going to need to. And we need to follow what inspires us. How am I moved to work for my values and work for justice? So I will stop with that, and